Tower, April 14th, 1989, Scoville Library, Salisbury. We'll start with your name, your full name.
Yes, all right. I'm Penelope Grant of Salisbury.
Your maiden name was what?
My maiden name was Penelope Hunter.
You go ahead with what you want.
Okay. Well, I was thinking back almost 100 years ago to the time when my grandmother came to Salisbury from New York City, and I thought she really started a trend in 1900, a New Yorker coming to Salisbury because she had heard it was so beautiful. And she brought with her her fifth and youngest child, her only son, who was the only child of her second marriage. She had been twice widowed, and by her first marriage to a Mr. Robert Temple Emmett, she had four daughters.
Robert Temple Emmett. Would you spell the last name?
Yes, E-M-M-E-T.
Good.
She had four daughters who in 1900 were all in their early 20s. They were Mary, Rosina, Ellen, and Leslie. And Ellen and Leslie had been art students and were at this point painters, starting out their careers as painters. So these girls were pretty much on their own, but my grandmother, who had been twice widowed, didn't want her youngest child, a boy of 8, to grow up in New York City. So she came here and stepped off the train in Salisbury and went to the nearest inn, which was the Maple Shade, and it's now the Ragamot. And from that day on, she didn't leave Salisbury very often. She liked it so much. She bought a farm, which she named Barrack Matiff Farm. Barrack Matiff. Matiff from the mountain.
Would you?
Yes.
Would
well,
you spell?
There are different spellings, but one is B-A-R-A-C-K-M-A-T-I-F. Barrack Matiff, or two F's. That is a common spelling of it. And her farm was the first house on the Taconic Road when you turn off Route 44. Going toward Taconic, and it's still called Barrack Matiff Farm. It's she sold it to Mrs. Scoville of the Scoville family, and now Mrs. Scoville's great granddaughter lives in it, Orlena Ferrusky Argle lives there. Now there's been a great deal of discussion about the origin of the name Barrack Matiff, because no one has any real.
Just before we leave your grandmother,
I
just wanted to get a couple of things. Your grandmother's name was what?
Oh yes, my grandmother's name, her maiden name, was Ellen James Temple. She married Christopher Temple Emmett, and they were first cousins.
Uh-huh.
Her second husband, Mr. Emmett, died. Her second husband was a George Hunter of Glasgow, Scotland. And he came to this country. He designed golf courses, and he was the first American golf champion. But he didn't like the United States. And after a few years, he went back to Scotland. So my grandmother was on her own.
And she came to Salisbury approximately what date?
I think I said 1900.
In
1900, yeah. She left New York in 1900, as I said, almost 100 years ago.
Right. And then you mentioned that she took a train to Salisbury.
Yes, from Grand Central Station to Salisbury. The station, you know where it was, was right down.
Down
behind the Congregational Church.
Uh-huh.
And she could walk just a few hundred feet to the what is now the Ragamot Inn, was then the Maple Shade Inn.
Right. All right. Now you wanted to go on with the Barrack.
Well, shall we? People are interested in the name Barrack Matiff, but a great deal of mystery surrounds it. And some people say it must be of Dutch origin. But Winifred Van Dyle, who lives here and is Dutch, she can't see any connection either in the word Barrack or Matiff to the Dutch language. But I am very interested in the theory of Ronald Solon, who is native, lives here in Salisbury, went to school here. And he wrote about the origin of the name recently in the Lakeville Journal. And why don't I read just a little bit of this?
Please do.
I think it's worth preserving. The just north of Salisbury, along Route 44, there is an elongated ridge known locally as Barrack Matif by some and as Bart Matif by others. The origin of the name has been obscured by time, and suggestions that the name is of Dutch origin are not correct. Mountains or mountain systems incorporating the word barrack are common throughout this region, from the Catskills to Long Island Sound, which suggests more than ordinary significance to the word. Since the word is the key, I assumed the word could be researched, and I scoured dictionaries of Cymric and Gaelic, which would have been languages presumably spoken or understood by members of British exploration parties several hundred years ago. Now, I could digress on that because at the time of the Revolution, they say Hessian soldiers were encamped on that flat field, right below Barrack Matif, and the word barrack, well, of course, they were German, but still, they were British, fighting for the British. They were encamped below the mountain. And then now, to continue with Ron Solon, he says, in McAlpin's Pronouncing Gaelic Dictionary, I found the word bioch, pronounced barrack, an adjective meaning pointed or pyramidal. It is interesting that every terrain feature named barrack, in part, from the barracks in the Catskills to Barrack Matif and Barrack Mountain across from the Housatonic Valley Regional High School, contains within its system one or more hills, distinct from mountain peaks, which are definitely of pyramidal shape and have their bases in a valley. These pyramidal hills are all located along routes of travel, such as the Hudson River, Housatonic River, or a valley, which would have been a route of travel when no roads existed. These hills would have made excellent reference points for exploration parties and travelers, and due to their unique characteristics would not be confused with mountain peaks, such as Bear Mountain. One could confirm this by observing Barrack Matif from Route 41 north of Salisbury, or Lookout Point from the Regional High School. As for the grammatical conflict between noun and adjective, it will not have been the first time an adjective became a noun. And that's probably...
Yeah, you mentioned the Hessians. One of the things I've picked up that other people have mentioned is that the Hessians perhaps had subsequently, or even during the war, settled on Mount Riga. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I have heard that during the Revolution, Hessians were around here. They say they hid out here, Hessians, because, and also on Mount Riga, because that Taconic Range, Mount Riga is part of the Taconic Range, really made a barrier between the Oblong Valley, which runs north from Milliton. They felt they was. I have heard this said, that they felt safe here, and that the Hessians were on Mount Riga.
Were they the first settlers there?
No, they say the first settlers here were Dutch who came over from the Hudson River. And Dutch's Bridge on Route 41 going to Canaan, that flat land there along the Hudson, the Housatonic, they say three Dutch families lived there and they called it Dutchman's Bridge or Dutch's Bridge. So they say the Dutch were the very first.
In that connection, are you acquainted with stories about an Ankrum scream or scream of Ankrum?
No.
No, okay.
I've only read about it.
Oh, you haven't read about it?
Yeah, I heard about the Ankrum screamers in Mount Riga stories, but that's all. I've just heard those stories.
What is the essence of the story?
I'd have to look it up.
Right.
I think it's in someone's oral history.
Oh.
It may, perhaps.
We'll check
Would it
that.
Be George Kiefer? I'm not sure. Yeah, we'll check that.
Right.
Or I think Lou Burgess would know about it. She's done a lot of research.
Oh, good. Okay.
But in this Highlights in the History of Salisbury, Connecticut, which is for sale for a dollar, it says in 1700 it was a wilderness destined to become 38,601-acre town of Salisbury. 1720, Dutch settlers purchased land from Indians along western bank of Housatonic River and call it Weetog. Weetog is at the foot of Smith Hill, and that was an Indian tribe. And then it says 1731, ore beds discovered by colonial land prospectors, and so on. It's all in this small booklet, highlights in the history of Salisbury, Connecticut, 1700 to 1981.
Very good. You mentioned that that your grandmother had four daughters. I assume one of
yes.
them was your mother.
No. See, my father was their younger half-brother. This is my father's family.
Uh-huh.
See, my grandmother had four daughters and a son.
Oh, I see.
They were his older half-sisters.
Oh, so that
women,
the son
yes.
is your
My father,
your
yeah.
father.
My grandmother's son is
right.
my father.
Okay.
No, my mother was Canadian. Came from Toronto.
Uh-huh.
My mother was born in Winnipeg.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But could you trace her history? Are you into, did you know your grandmother on her side or grandfather on her side?
Yes, I could. It's quite interesting. She had Huguenot ancestors, and there was a Lord Angelbert.
Would you spell that?
E-N-J-E-L-B-E-R-T.
Uh-huh.
And my mother's middle name was Angelbert. There was a Lord Angelbert in her forebears, and Huguenots from France who went to Canada.
Mm-hmm. That is interesting.
Well, it's interesting.
So that your family then, perhaps on both sides, settled quite early in the United States or Canada?
Fairly early, yes. My mother's father was a Canadian pioneer. He went west with the railroad
uh-huh.
to the Pacific coast
in
and then
Canada.
Came back
yeah.
in Canada.
Uh-huh.
Yes,
right.
Yes, they were quite old.
And on the other side, your family were also early settlers?
Oh.
You mentioned that your grandmother had come from New York. Do you know anything prior to that time?
Well, my grandmother was her family, the Temples, you know, go way back in English history. I've never really followed it back. Then there was a Lord George Grenville of stamp tax fame, right?
Oh, yes.
George Grenville. And my father was Grenville. His name was Grenville.
Uh-huh.
That came family. Then my grandmother's middle name was James, and she was related to Henry and William James, the writers. But there's so much, it's so complicated, you know, let's not go into it. Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, it is interesting.
All right, pick up where you want, where you have it there.
All right. Well, as I say, my father grew up here, and he loved Salisbury, and he had a wonderful life as a young man because they hunted and fished and rode horses. And he lived only a half mile from the Salisbury School, so when that was founded, and he was in his teens, when that was founded by Dr. Quayle, Dr. Quayle founded it, my father went there for his high school years. And on the farm, Barrack Matiff Farm, down below the farm in the valley where the stream runs down from Fisher Pond, down becomes Moore Brook. In Salisbury Village it becomes Moore Brook and goes on toward Lime Rock. As it gets toward Lime Rock it's called Salmon Kill on your way. There was a spring of beautiful fresh water on his farm down in that valley, and he had a neighbor named Andy Fox, and he and Andy Fox bottled this water and sold it, and they called it Fox Hunter Spring Water. And until laws appeared, you know, that they shouldn't just be bottling and selling it, they did that, and then they gave it up. But they say it's still wonderfully pure water. Now, my earliest memories?
Your father, was he the photographer, or was it your grandfather?
No, my father was the photographer,
your father
Grenville
was the
Hunter.
Photographer.
And he, in the 20s, he said, I would like to take as many pictures of old characters and interesting people who live around here, you know, and assemble them and keep them. But unfortunately, he died very suddenly when he was 40, so he never finished that project.
Mm-hmm.
But he left about 800 negatives. He was a self-taught photographer. But he had a good camera, and he left all these negatives. So a few years ago, we picked out 50 of them and gave them to the Salisbury Association to keep in their archives, pictures of old characters and old scenes.
One of the things that was mentioned in some of the oral history was the Shays Rebellion, which touched in this area?
Yes.
Were your ancestors involved?
No, you see, because they didn't come here till 1900.
Oh, that's
right. My grandmother didn't come here till 1900, right.
Of course, that was after that, right.
But I just would like to say those 50 photographs are called the Hunter Collection, and they belong to the Salisbury Association.
They're in the Scoville Library.
Yes, in the Salisbury Association.
And people can see them here.
Quarters, yes.
And they were published in the Lakeville Journal when?
This winter. We had a show of them here in the gallery, in the library.
And also
the Lakeville Journal wrote it up. Then they had a show in Noble Horizons. At the moment, 10 of them are hanging in the town hall. Yeah, Charlotte Reed wanted to put them down.
Very good.
Booped, yes, yes.
All right, now we'll go into your drawing up here.
Well, I was born, my parents were married in 1914, and I was born in 1915, when they were living in what is now Robert Leach's house across from St. John's Church. And my earliest memory, really, is of the Maple Shade Inn, which was across the road from us. Because in 1918, when my father was in the service, we lived at the Maple Shade. And it was owned by an elderly woman named Ida Russell and her son, Will Russell. And my earliest memory is Will Russell had a buggy, and he used to take me buggy riding in it. And that was very exciting. And I remember how the village looked when I was very young. The stores are still there. What is now the Connecticut Yankee was George Clark's grocery store. And next to it, the small building was a barber shop.
Was that, I noticed in one of the photographs that your father made, there was a, now the Clark, am I right in the Clark store is now the bank, right, where the bank is?
Well, he had two stores.
Oh,
he had two stores. The Connecticut Yankee was his grocery store.
Oh, I see.
And what is now the Salisbury Bank was his dry goods store.
And there was a,
and there was
I
a barber
there was
shop
open,
in between,
oh, there was
a small building,
shop.
Tiny
But
building.
There were open spaces between
yes,
the buildings.
Yes, buildings that don't join. They don't touch.
Right.
No. Yes, what is now the bank was his dry goods store, and the pharmacy was a pharmacy, and had the post office was incorporated in what
and the
was
same
attached
owners,
to pharmacy.
The pharmacy,
I believe the Whitbeck, as I know Sam Whitbeck was the owner in my during my childhood. I always remember over the front door of the grocery store it said, oleomargarine sold here. But it never occurred to me to ask anyone what oleomargarine was. It made a big impression on me. Behind all those buildings in the village were carriage stalls for people who came into town in their carriages. Those were very picturesque. Where Shagroy now stands, there was a ring of carriage stalls where people could leave their horses and carriages during the day. And so many of the roads at that time were dirt roads. We lived halfway up Selick Hill, and in the spring there were times when people simply couldn't get out without walking. Although most people, most farmers had rugged wagons that they could use, but those dirt roads made a big difference in your life. And I remember we had kerosene lamps in my childhood on Selick Hill, and I remember Miss Julia Petit, Miss Petty, who lived on the top of the hill,
right.
And she always walked.
And how do you spell her name?
She wrote the History of Salisbury, P-E-T-T-E-E.
Right.
Her father or grandfather was the well-known ironmaster. I suppose it was her father, but I'm not positive. Joseph Petty was the famous ironmaster up on Mount Raga. And I remember on Selick Hill, there was a unique spring which bubbled out of the ground called Boiling Spring, right where the woods yielded to pasture land going up Selick Hill. We knew where there was this spring, and it boiled up through the grass. It was quite a sight, and whether it's still there or not, I don't know. It was hard to find.
That was not a hot spring, was it?
No, it was a cold spring, but it came up right through the sand. It was utterly pure, just boiling up through sand. Rather unique. Yeah, it wasn't in a pasture, so it was clean. We didn't live here. After we became older, we didn't live here in the winters because my father went in the advertising business, and first he was in Schenectady with the General Electric, and then we moved to New York City. And so our schooling was in New York City, mm-hmm. but we spent our summers here. And this is where our roots were.
About how old were you when that started, where you didn't spend the 4 years here?
I was about 8 years old when that started, mm-hmm. yes. And so we were really summer people at that point, mm-hmm. but this was the place that we loved. And I remember as a child here how important the library was. You know, it was really the most exciting place in town.
And it was
library.
In the same right. place.
Oh, yes, absolutely. The same place. That big reading room as you come in was a meeting room, a hall. And it had a stage. Where we're sitting now, there was a stage.
Oh, yeah.
And they had lots of performances here of all kinds.
Amateur or professional?
It depends. Yeah, all kinds. Yeah, lots of amateur
concerts,
Concerts, yeah, plays that local people put on. Mm-hmm. As well, and there also was a stage in the town hall, as we all remember. Before it burned.
Yeah,
there was a stage there and there was a stage here. It was a very nice. See, those windows were on either side. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was thinking back to my childhood, how simple our lives were compared to the lives of children nowadays. We were just left to ourselves, you know, to amuse ourselves.
Describe, let us say, a typical day, as well as you can.
Well, we lived outside the village on Selick Hill, and we were just turned loose, you know.
What time did you get up
ourselves.
In the morning?
Oh, Bob.
Yes.
I suppose when our elders got up, we got up.
Early.
I don't think awfully early. Probably 8 o'clock, something like that.
Did you have chores to do?
We had little household tasks. Yes, we had household, but we didn't have any animals. Now, when Frank and I had children, we had animals. Because we thought it was good for the children to take care of different kinds of animals. Can we turn this off?
Sure. So you got up approximately at 8 o'clock.
Yes, I think it was summer vacation. I think we had a pretty easy life. But we were left very much to ourselves, and we really played in the woods and the streams. I remember that vividly. We played up and down streams.
Did you play any particular games of any kind? Or?
No, we built little, miniature houses and docks and had little boats, and it was a very simple life when you think about it. And we had bicycles, but we walked a bike almost everywhere we went.
Mm-hmm.
Except I do remember our parents took us to Lakeville Lake every afternoon. That was it. There were bathhouses. What is now the Grove was called Timmins. It was owned by a man named Timmins, yes. I think it was George Timmins,
uh-huh.
owned the Grove. And he had fishing boats, big wooden fishing boats, and canoes for rent, and bathhouses. So Timmins was the swimming place.
When did it become a public beach?
I don't remember. We'd have to ask. I think that's when it was given to the town by Mrs. Belcher, Mrs. Ward Belcher.
Mm-hmm.
Bought the Grove and gave it to the town, but I imagine the land originally probably was owned by the Rudd family, I would think, because Hollywood, the Rudd place, adjoins it.
Yes.
So I don't know when it became public. Mm-hmm.
When you say we played together, is that brothers and sisters?
Oh, I had a sister,
friends.
I had one sister. Well,
you had friends in the area.
Yes, and I had cousins, and I realized that our social life was revolved mainly about our family. It was very family oriented. Yes. And I remember in the evenings we just played games, you know, charades. Different kinds of drawing games and paper games, you know, and writing different things. And I was thinking today too, we had a wind up Victrola and we had a magic lantern. And we had my aunt.
Oh, magic! Oh,
you remember magic lanterns?
Of course.
Yeah, that was big stuff.
I remember that.
And my aunt.
Magic lantern. That's where you put a slide.
You could project.
You project.
We had a light and a projector,
and you
could project it onto a wall.
Uh-huh.
Right. Imagine mm-hmm. pre-runner of a movie, I suppose. There were stills. My aunt had a stereopticon camera,
mm-hmm.
which when the films were developed, they were side by side, the same picture was side by side, and when you looked at it through a special holder and a lens, it produced one a three-dimensional image. And we found that very interesting, three-dimensional pictures. We spent a lot of time on Mount Ryder because my father had helped the Warner family build their camp, which was called Lotus Lodge.
Locust?
Lotus.
Lotus.
That's what made
Lodge.
Me think of
right.
Lotus,
yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It was called Lotus Lodge yeah. after the Lotus Eaters, because if you ate the lotus,
right.
you became forgetful and forgot all your cares and relaxed.
Like Ulysses, you didn't get home for 20 years.
Exactly. Exactly. And Mount Ryder was very wild in those days. In my earliest childhood, we would go up in buggies and wagons onto Mount Ryder. But the road was the same then as it is now, very steep and difficult. And I remember the Memorial Day parades loomed large uh-huh. in our life at that time. And I particularly remember that lilacs were always in bloom. And children carried in one hand an American flag and in the other hand a bunch of lilacs to put on the graves. But now lilacs are usually gone
yeah,
by Memorial Day, which may show a change in climate. And I was thinking in those days we didn't have mockingbirds or cardinals or bluebirds in the winter here. Now, of course, we do. They have all come north. And I remember on Mount Ryder there was a beautiful low-growing plant called Trailing Arbutus, which was even then quite rare and protected. And it grew low under leaves, and it blossomed in March, and it had a wonderful scent. It was a very exciting plant.
And it was called what?
Trailing Arbutus.
Arbutus.
Arbutus, A-R-B-U-T-U-S. Trailing uh-huh. Arbutus. And one man who lived on Mount Ryder every spring would send us a little bunch of it in the city, packed in wet cotton. It was very exciting. And I've been meaning to ask whether there is any more arbutus. It was an endangered species. It was a lovely, lovely plant. And I remember, too, that there was a gravel path that ran between Salisbury and Lakeville, which made it easy for people to walk. Mm-hmm. There was a
along the
path.
Main road?
Along the main road, yeah. This side of the road. That's about...
All right, before we leave that area, mm-hmm. did you attend school at all in this area?
No, I never did.
You never did.
I never attended school.
And now, you talked about the Memorial Day Parade. Is there any one experience that sticks out above all others? you of course have talked about several very interesting ones, but just perhaps there was one.
Well, I don't remember any big event. Uh-huh. I don't remember, you know, a fire or an alarm of any kind.
Mm-hmm. There was a fire in 1903 and 1913. Yeah, but that was before your time.
I've heard about those fires. Yeah, I don't remember any really big event.
Yeah.
And I think going on Mount Ryder was the most exciting thing mm-hmm. we did because it was still very wild.
And remote. Still is, isn't
still
it?
Still is.
That's wonderful.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right.
No, I had nothing really.
Did you, you mentioned a carriage places.
Carriage sheds.
Sheds. Were there any behind the Congregational Church?
I think so, but those houses were there.
Oh, yeah. There were houses
so
there
I think
already.
The same houses yeah. were there. So I think it was, they probably had to walk over from there, mm-hmm. yes.
And then you mentioned that someone, I forgot who it was now, you mentioned was responsible for the iron production up on Mount...
The iron master, Joseph Petit was a famous iron master.
And was the furnace operating up there, the one that is still up there at the time?
Or? No, that was shut down really, I think, in the middle, early 1800s.
Early
it was in its heyday during the Revolution, mm-hmm. that furnace. But they had to bring the iron ore up the mountain. Then they had to take the finished iron products down. And you probably know, during the Revolution, they made part of the chain that was stretched across the Hudson River,
oh, yes.
took it down the New York side, and they made the anchors for the the Constitution and, what was the other? Constellation. Now, the Constellation and the those big sailing ships. The Constitution and the Constellation.
And the Constellation.
They made the anchors for them. And, of course, the original village of Salisbury was on Mount Riga.
I didn't know that.
Yes. Lakeville was called Furnace Village in the early days because it was a furnace. Are we still recording?
No, we're still there. Yeah.
Lakeville was called Furnace Village.
Furnace Village
because of the furnace there, which was owned by Ethan Allen's brother. Was it Thomas Allen?
Mm-hmm.
The Allens were a big family.
Mm, yes.
Of course, Ethan Allen lived at the north end of Salisbury.
Mm-hmm.
As did Mr. Moore of Moore Brook.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Moore was a surveyor.
Yes.
And Alexander Hamilton came early to Salisbury when he first arrived in this country. Of course, he went to Columbia University, but he came up here and lived with Mr. Moore and studied surveying.
Mm-hmm. This was
Alexander
pre-revolution.
No, Alexander Hamilton was, wasn't he in the late 1700s?
Well, he participated in the Revolutionary War. He came from St. Croix, right?
He came from St. Croix. I didn't know that he was in the war. I really didn't know.
Oh, yes.
And then when was he shot by Aaron Burr? Was it?
That was after 1800. Yeah, in the early 1800s.
Yes. Right. No, but he lived here for a while.
But the first village was
on Mount Riga, and they had a school, and they had a store, and a burying ground, but they never had a church. So people came down to Salisbury to go to church. There was a church here, mm-hmm. congregation.
Now, the
church.
People who lived on Mount Riga then, at that time, when it was the village was up there, they were then, I'm trying to relate that
yes.
to some of the stories about the Hessians who were supposed to have lived up there.
Right. Well, let's see now. The iron ore was discovered in 1730, and in 1732, the land was surveyed and divided up. But the first town was on the mountain, and it had everything a town needed up there. It was a thriving, and of course the Swiss came, and the French, and French Canadians, because they understood charcoal burning.
Right,
a lot of foreign charcoal burners came. And I've read accounts of balls that took place in the ironmaster's house, which was quite grand. Balls at which Hessian soldiers danced. And it was after the revolution that they say better ore was discovered in other ore beds, in other parts of the country,
mm-hmm.
and better quality ore, and also the difficulty of getting stuff up and down the mountain, that furnace closed down rather early. And then a lot of people were out of work. Now, many people moved down to the valleys, but some stayed on Mount Riga, and here we have the origin of the people who are called today the Raggies. And that is not a derogatory term. Because of course, now this discussion of why is Mount Riga not called Mount Riga? Because some people say it was named by Latvians who came from Riga in Latvia. Others say it was named by the Swiss who came from a department in Switzerland which had a mountain called Rigi, different spelling. But the Riga spelling is the same as Riga in Latvia. And nobody really knows why it's called Riga. Therefore, if you are called a Raggy, it simply means you lived on Mount Riga. It doesn't mean you're a ragged person or a bum, you know. And so that the true Raggies here, the old families, are very proud of their heritage. And many of them stayed up there and hunted and fished and trapped. Didn't get much schooling, probably, because after a while I don't think the school closed down until sometime in the 1900s, the school up there. So to be a Raggy is a very proud thing.
Yes. Yes, I had learned that. You were coming up here then summers, and did you continue to do that until you came here back here permanently? Or?
No, well, what happened was, let's see, my father died in 1932, and when I was in high school, and then I went to college, and then I married, you know, so that I didn't live here.
Mm-hmm.
until we came back in 1979. But my mother had stayed here, so I always came here, but didn't spend a great deal of time here between...
What is your educational background?
Well, it's not very interesting. I mean, high school in New York at the Brearley School, which is an awfully good school.
It is.
Still, and then Bryn Mawr College.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
And then I went into teaching. So.
And you taught in...
I taught in different cities.
But you had a specialty, didn't you?
Well, yes, I taught children who had difficulty with learning. Mm-hmm. Learning language disabled or dyslexic children.
Mm-hmm. When did you come back? Here,
we moved back here. Frank and I met here, so he used to visit my cousins. We came back here to live in 1979.
Uh-huh. Is Frank a native from here? Or
no, he was
visited?
Born in Texas. His father was an army career.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah,
Frank.
Yeah. But we did meet here. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Now, when you do you recall, perchance? Mm-hmm. The changes that you found when you came back, did anything strike you that you could note?
Well, one thing which struck me 10 years ago was it didn't seem to have changed a great deal. It still had the flavor of a country town. It still had a lot of what you might call old families, families that had been here a long time. There was a great feeling for the town. But of course, now I am very much aware of what we call weekend people, part-time people. Mm-hmm. That is bringing great changes to the town.
Well, did you note any physical changes in town that struck you particularly?
I don't really think so. Everyone liked it in the days when there were quite a few shops in Lakeville. Mm-hmm. That was nice, and most of them. Now, useful shops, grocery stores.
You could get a spool of thread sometimes.
Yes, exactly. It's remarkable at first glance how little it has changed. I mean, Hotchkiss School and Sorger School are bigger, but they were there. And some hotels have gone, but no big landmarks have burned that I can think of disappeared. There was something called the Wenonsco House. The real name of the lake is Lake Wenonskopomoc. And there was a three-story Victorian summer hotel called Wenonsco House at the top of the hill in Lakeville, looking across the grove. It's not there now. Yes, we're next to the Holly Williams house. Mm-hmm. It was a large Victorian summer hotel.
When your grandmother started coming up here, this mm-hmm. was a kind of a resort place, wasn't it, Lakeville?
Well, I wouldn't think so.
No.
I would call Norfolk was more of a resort. Okay. People came from Boston, but they didn't seem to come here, because I guess the train came from Boston, perhaps, to Norfolk. I don't know. Of course, it came from Hartford.
Now, the train here to Salisbury came from...
New York.
Yeah.
Yes, but it went right on. You could go to Chicago. You could keep going. You could connect uh-huh. with the whole country. But it came up from Grand Central. It was the Harlem Valley Line.
Oh, yeah.
It came up to Milton and went on to Pittsfield and North Adams.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But there was a branch coming to Salisbury. No, what struck me was how little it seemed to have changed. But then when you live here, you feel the changes. But I find the countryside very wild still.
Yes.
You can get lost on these mountains. Yes.
Good walking places, good hikes. Do you have anything in your notes?
I don't really think I have.
All right. Now, since you've been back, I was interested in a town hall meeting participation.
Oh, yes. Well, speaking of the town hall, that was the focal point of the town, the town hall, and I suppose it still is. It had that large meeting room, and they used to have dances and theaters and performances, because it was a big hall. And that was the focal point of the town.
They had those when you were growing up here.
Yes.
But when you came back, they were no longer here.
Well, they had meetings. Yes, meetings. You remember they had talks. I remember in my growing up years, all of us participated in plays. I remember the importance of being earnest, mm-hmm. and I remember what amazing me. But Well, as a child, I wasn't too aware of the town, no. But I was aware that the town hall was very important in the life of the town.
It's interesting that they had all those activities.
Yes, in that big hall.
Yeah, would be good to have them today.
Yes, I mean, I don't want to denigrate the new town hall, but I don't think, I think it lacks a big meeting room, a really big meeting room to hold enough people.
That's true.
Mm-hmm.
Now, would you tell us something about the organization and how you got involved in the library art, those wonderful art showings here.
Now, Bob, let me just go back a little.
Please do.
Yes, my impression of the town, at that time, the town, everyone participated in something, I would say, you know, from the very poor to the not poor. You know, it was a cohesive town. You knew everybody, and everyone seemed to participate in something. And now I feel there's much too big a line, perhaps, between the haves and the have-nots. And I don't think as many people go to church and a lot of churches here as they did in those days. The churches were quite a focal point in our lives.
Oh.
You know what I mean? And perhaps because there's so many new people here, you don't have that feeling of cohesion in the town, where everyone knew everybody, and probably everyone helped everybody.
And also, I understand that most of the population now are weekenders, so that
tremendous percentage.
They would cut in on cohesion.
Yes.
But that's interesting. So that the two focal points for cohesion you felt were the
town hall
and the churches.
And the churches.
And the attendance at both you seem to indicate.
I feel perhaps the attendance in churches has fallen off, although there may be a resurgence.
The library art showing. I want to know how those were organized, how you got involved.
How I got involved in that. Well, we came back in 1979, and they had just designed a gallery in the library. It had never had a gallery before, with good walls for hanging things and good lighting. And at that time, they were looking for someone to have organize the shows. And so they asked me to do it, and I've been doing it. And I am giving it up now. So I've been doing
You're giving it up?
Oh, I've given it up, yeah.
Who's doing it?
I have done 86 shows, consecutive shows. And I said I thought it was time for change. And I thought it was important to have someone who works at the library be on that committee, just to be involved, just so the library is more intimately involved with the shows. And so I suggested a new committee. The committee I had has never been very active. They're artists and they're charming and interested, but not willing to work.
So that actually it started
about 10
when
years
you
got... ago. Yes. The library had been designed, but there was no one putting on the shows. So now, this is my last year of it. There is a committee, two people who work here at the library, Holly Dayball and Ibba Williams.
Oh, yes.
You know that. And Martha Platt from Taconic, who was a watercolorist.
Oh, yes.
That's the new committee.
I see.
Yes.
Well, now, when you were asked to start it, how'd you go about starting? What'd you do?
Well, they had some shows.
Oh,
you know, it was sort of casual, but, by good artists. And it just landed in my lap. And the first show, it was January 1981, December 1980, and there was no show for January, for the next year. So actually, the Northwest Corner Committee for Nuclear Disarmament, the NCCND, was being formed, and one of the organizers had a marvelous show that he knew about the dangers of nuclear warfare. So that was the first show. Who was that guy? Robin Benz, right?
Gary Chasman.
Gary Chasman had marvelous panels that he was able to get.
Oh, now I begin
blown
to remember.
Up. Yeah, very professional.
Oh, yes.
Was portraying the dangers of nuclear war. So that was our first show.
The dangers of nuclear war.
And we just went on from there. Yes, they're all, we have a record of the shows we've had. But
they were outstanding.
Some of them were, yeah.
Oh, yes.
But the philosophy of the gallery is, hopefully never, if an artist wants to show, and the artist should have some connection with Salisbury Light, some connection. If a person wants to show, we don't want to say, no, your work isn't, you're not ready, your work isn't good enough, you know, so on, so on. And we have never had to turn anyone down for any reason, and we don't want to, because it is a community thing, community service.
Valuable.
Yes.
Very valuable.
Yes. When we're not recording, I'll tell you something.
And also, you do volunteer at Noble as well.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
What do you do there?
I volunteer many hours at Noble. Well, they have a large print library at Noble now.
Yes,
there is there's an organization at Noble called the Auxiliary, to which people belong. You know, the dues are low. The Auxiliary. And they look for volunteers from the Auxiliary. And the library has volunteers one morning a week. And many of us take turns. It's a well-organized library. It has about 500 large print volumes and perhaps the same number of ordinary print volumes, which has simply been donated. And then I volunteer Wednesday mornings. They have two church services. They have a Catholic Mass and an Episcopal Communion. And so many people are in wheelchairs and can't walk, who have to be taken, who want to get to the services. And I visit and I work in the nursing wing and just do what's needed, get to know the residents and try to bring the outside world into their lives a bit.
Mm-hmm. And I know that on occasion you also read with Martha Briscoe.
Oh yes, I did yesterday, yes. Yes, yeah. Wonderful.
And you're a participant in the Peace Vigil. So here you are, you are involved in many interests in the community.
Yes, well, it's a wonderful life here, and I belong to a French group. We work very hard in that, six people with a teacher. We have a French group, which is very interesting. I belong to the Older Women's League, or OWL, which is trying to improve the lives of older women, particularly in this country, who seem to get the short end of the stick in many ways and have